This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The final debates before Iowan's caucus in 3 weeks' time. New polls show the race tightening on both sides in two key primary states, and Oprah stumps for Obama. It's Wednesday, and time again for the political junkie.
There you go again.
My name is Geraldine Ferraro.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I'm John Kerry, and I'm reporting for duty.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to answer your questions about the campaign and the horse race, the debates, the ads, the fundraising, and the inevitable fumbles. And as we get closer to the first test about how voters feel about the candidates, there's plenty to talk about. The Republican candidates are debating right now in Des Moines. Democrats have their turn tomorrow. New polls show the race getting closer in New Hampshire and South Carolina. And the 00 Express, that would be Oprah and Obama, hit the hustings this past weekend. And we have another trivia question for you later in the program. The stories of civilizations in maps, cartographia. But first, the political junkie, Ken Rudin, is with us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And a trivia question for our audience this week.
It's a good one. Who were the candidates who won competitive Iowa caucuses who went on to win the presidential election that year?
Who were the candidates who won competitive Iowa caucuses and went on to win the election as president the next year?
Or the
same year.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. If you know the answer, if you have questions about how the race is shaping up, our question here number here in Washington, it's also the question, is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. So, Ken, these final debates, as they begin, there's a lot at stake here.
Tremendous amount at stake, especially because these are the last debates before the Iowa caucuses take place January 3rd. That's 22 days away from now. And again, we've seen in the past the debates have made a major difference on both sides. The questions about Hillary Clinton's electability came because of a stumbling answer she gave in the Philadelphia debate. The rise of Mike Huckabee on the Republican side came because a lot of people saw her and a lot of analysts described him as being affable and friendly and forthcoming in debate answers. So these debates have had tremendous amount of influence in how voters have seen the candidates.
As the front runner, Mitt Romney was playing it softly. Now that he's trailing Mike Huckabee's by a considerable margin in the polls in Iowa, he's gone on the attack. There's a new ad released this week where he attacks Huckabee's stance on immigration. Let's listen.
Two former governors, two good family men, both pro-life, both support a constitutional amendment protecting traditional marriage. The difference? Mitt Romney stood up and vetoed in-state tuition for illegal aliens, opposed driver's licenses for illegals. Mike Huckabee supported in-state tuition benefits for illegal immigrants. Huckabee even supported taxpayer-funded scholarships for illegal aliens. On immigration, the choice matters.
And that is a big issue for a lot of Iowa Republicans.
It absolutely is. But it also shows, I think, the rise of Mike Huckabee has been a shock to many of us who've been watching this race, but none more so than Mitt Romney, who has spent millions of dollars in the state, basically thought that he had the state in the bag. He was looking on to other states where he might have a tougher fight for the nomination. And the fact that Huckabee has challenged him and in most polls have taken over the lead has given the Romney campaign a scare. But at the same time, a lot of people feel that the Huckabee record when he was governor of Arkansas, the 10 years he was governor of Arkansas, has not been fully examined. Questions about immigration policy, questions about what he said about AIDS patients and whether they should be quarantined, which he said when he ran for the Senate in 1992. And there's an article coming out in the Sunday New York Times Magazine article where Huckabee questions whether Mormons felt that
Jesus and Satan are brothers.
Are brothers, exactly. So there's a lot of questions about Huckabee. And, of course, once you're the front runner, you become the guy with the bullseye in the back.
Now, Huckabee says that question was taken out of context.
That's
of
right.
course. And Mitt Romney says that's below the belt. You shouldn't challenge somebody's religion.
Well, exactly. Especially the fact that Romney tried to, the question about his Mormonism has been a big issue hanging over the Romney campaign from day one. And I guess, Romney just feels that attacking him on that. I mean, not too long ago, Huckabee was asked whether he felt Mormonism was a cult. Huckabee refused to answer. So Romney obviously takes umbrage at that.
Okay. Now let's go to the other side, and that's the Democrats, where Obama, who's been in the lead now for a while in Iowa, seems to be maintaining it.
He is, and what's most interesting about this is that the argument in the Hillary Clinton campaign was always, well, you know, even if Hillary Clinton should lose Iowa, she had the firewall in New Hampshire, and yet a new polls in New Hampshire show that firewall no longer exists. There's a CNN poll that was released yesterday, taken for the University of New Hampshire, shows it. Hillary Clinton, 31, Barack Obama, 30. There's also a Mason-Dixon poll that shows Hillary Clinton up 30-27. And there's a Rasmussen poll, which I don't have as much credence on as the other two polls, but still it shows Barack Obama, let me see it here, 31-28 lead over Hillary Clinton. So, you know, we always talk about these national polls, and she and Hillary Clinton still has a huge lead nationally among Democrats. But obviously these first initial primaries and caucuses, Iowa, then New Hampshire 5 days later, are crucial and will ultimately affect subsequent states and the national polls.
Well, the other Democrat who's, close to the top in both those states, John Edwards, he has committed to Iowa, too. It's just as important for him as it is for Mitt Romney, isn't it?
Well, I would say even more so because unlike Mitt Romney, who is very wealthy and has a strong financial stakes in many other subsequent states, John Edwards, since he lost the vice presidency in 2004, has basically lived in Iowa. He came very close in 2004, a close second to John Kerry, and has hoped from the beginning that a win in Iowa will send him off to subsequent states.
Well, let's get some callers in on this conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's go to David. David calling us from Peterborough in New Hampshire.
Good afternoon. I have a question for Mr. Rudin. I'm an ardent Democrat, and I listen to these wonderful candidates profess how selfless they are and how they are patriotically willing to serve the party and the country by running for president. But what I don't hear, and I'd like to hear, is for them all to have a mutual pact to serve as vice president if asked. Because that certainly would be make for some interesting combinations, and I think it's important to beat the despicable Republicans. So I'd like to hear about your thoughts about the utility and politics of that.
Ken?
Well, I don't, except for George McGovern in 1972, I don't recall any bunch of Democrats ever saying no to being offered the vice presidency. A lot were said no in 1972 when McGovern swept Massachusetts out of 50 states. But, you know, it's very interesting. The argument has always been that if Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, given the fact that Bill Clinton, her husband, and I believe he was the former president, would play such a huge role in the administration, maybe a vice presidency under Hillary Clinton would not be that crucial and not that influential. But there are a lot of, you know, talks about whether Joe Biden is running for vice president, whether Bill Richardson is running for vice president. The point is, let's watch what happens in Iowa, New Hampshire. Nobody's going to commit to a vice presidency until they realize they're out of the race. But, you know, we played on NPR in 2004 over and over again, John Edwards saying he would absolutely not consider running for vice president. That's when he was challenging for the Democratic nomination, and of course he took it. So they'll all say no. They'll all say they're in for the top spot, but ultimately they rarely say no if it's offered.
Okay, thanks very much for the call, David.
Thank you.
Let's go now, and I think this is a suggestion for our trivia quiz, and this is Michael. Michael with us from Oklahoma.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Oklahoma City.
And go ahead.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
No, that is incorrect. In 1980, when Ronald Reagan was elected president, he lost the Iowa caucuses to George Bush, the first George Bush. So Ronald Reagan, though...
Who he offered the vice presidency to.
nobody ever thought that would happen, too. But no, Reagan was elected that year, but lost the Iowa caucuses. So it's not Ronald Reagan.
Well, thanks for the call, Michael. Nice try. Let's see if we can get... who's this? David? Who is this calling from American Falls? Darren, go ahead.
Was it Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton?
It was Jimmy Carter in 1976, although officially, actually uncommitted, was a number one vote in 1976. But Carter was the strongest candidate and did win the presidency. He was the first of two, but Bill Clinton actually didn't even contest the caucuses in 1992. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin was the favorite son, and every other candidate basically stayed out of of Iowa that year. If memory serves, I think Clinton got 2% of the Iowa caucuses, but he didn't really compete. So it was not Bill Clinton.
Okay.
We need one more guy.
Darren, thanks.
It was Jimmy Carter. Thanks.
Okay, Darren, thanks very much. Let's get another caller in, and this is Dustin. And Dustin's calling us from Casper, Wyoming.
Neil, Ken, thanks as always for taking my call.
Sure.
Love the show.
Thank you.
Just really quickly, I'm an independent voter. I lean more Republican usually, so I don't follow the primary elections as much. And I guess our state has annoyed the national party. They're being punished in some way for changing a date. And I'm wondering how much of a punishment that really is, what the big stink was all about, for those of us who haven't been paying that close of attention. I can definitely take my answer off the air.
Okay, Darren, thanks very much. It's not just Wyoming either.
No, exactly. It's also Michigan on the Michigan and Florida. There were some states that were allowed a window into January to have their primaries and caucuses. And, of course, that's Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. Wyoming Republicans, who have always been ignored in the presidential primary and caucus process, moved up their county conventions till January 5th. They want to have an early say in there. And, of course, you know, Duncan Hunter and Fred Thompson and Mitt Romney have campaigned in Wyoming. But the national parties say they can either punish them, either take away half their delegates at the national convention or all of their delegates having the temerity to push up on the schedule. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, does it matter? No. I think these delegates will be seated. It will be up to the presidential nominee of both parties to intervene. And, of course, that will happen.
Ken has to leave us in just about a minute or so to go monitor the Republican presidential debate. But, Ken, before you go, we're going to be talking about endorsements in the next segment with Juan Williams about the Obama endorsement by Oprah Winfrey. But two other endorsements this week on the Republican side. The National Review came out, and the Minutemen, the founder of the Minutemen, that group that camps on the border to try to monitor border crossings.
Well, I don't know what that means for Mike Huckabee. Jim Gilchrist, the head of the Minutemen, has endorsed Mike Huckabee. And it's interesting because this is exactly coming at the time when Huckabee's record on immigration is under assault by Romney in the ad we just said. By the way, one thing about the debates you should know is that Alan Keyes, of all people, is one of the Republican candidates in today's debate, and yet in tomorrow's Democratic debate, neither Mike Gravel nor Dennis Kucinich have been invited. I think that's very interesting, too.
And we should mention the National Review, of course, endorsed Mitt Romney as the best conservative in the race. We'll have to see what their endorsements mean.
The trivia question. George W. Bush was the other person who won the Iowa caucuses in 2000 and was elected president that year.
Ken Rudin will be back with us next week with the Political Junkie. You can also read his column about the history of the Iowa caucuses at npr.org. And when we come back, Juan Williams will join us to talk about the African-American vote, Obama and Oprah and Hillary Clinton. It's the Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're going to change directions a bit and focus on an issue facing many African-American voters, especially African-American women. Who to vote for? For the first time in history, an African-American and a woman are among the front runners for the Democratic nomination for president. Not to disparage the other candidates, but opinion polls show most African-Americans support either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Over the weekend, one of the most influential women in the country made her decision plain. Here's Oprah Winfrey at an Obama rally in South Carolina.
There are those who say that it's not his time, that he should wait his turn. Think about where you'd be in your life if you'd waited when the people told you to. I wouldn't be where I am if I waited on the people who told me it couldn't be.
And joining us now to talk about the Oprah effect on the presidential race and what African-American voters are saying about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton is NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams here in Studio 3A. Of course, he's also one of my predecessors. He's hosted this program. Juan, good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And that rally in South Carolina, 30,000 people turned out. It was, everybody says, an amazing event.
Well, in a sense, what I've heard from so many people is that Oprah spoke in messianic language about Barack Obama, saying he's the one, almost as if she was John the Baptist calling out Jesus. And a lot of attention to the idea that Oprah Winfrey could bring so many new people into the mix. I mean, literally 30,000. The stadium held more, that could have held more than that. But who do you think in American politics could be such a magnet as to draw 30,000 people, many of whom really don't participate on a regular basis in the political process, and she did it.
And let's hear what that sounded like, a little bit of the rock star quality that Oprah Winfrey brought to the rally.
It's Obama time. It's Obama time. It's Obama time.
And that's a kind of charisma that's, well, not usual on the presidential circuit, at least this point in the campaign.
No, and the thing of it is, remember, South Carolina is unique in that you have such a large African-American presence in terms of the Democratic primary. Almost half of the vote in the Democratic primary in South Carolina is African-American. So a lot of the kind of ethos of the black church and black music, I think, came into this event. And that's why you hear her talking in these sort of biblical analogies, and the music and the sense of rhythm. I think that attached totally to Oprah Winfrey introducing Barack Obama to a black audience and trying to say to the black audience, you heard her just a moment ago, Neil, say, you know, people told me to wait. Where would you be if you had responded to people who told you to wait? She's talking about a black experience, and she's using a black reference point to say to people, you should go with Barack Obama at this point. Mm-hmm. Don't wait. Don't tap into the idea that Hillary Clinton has been there, is experienced, that Bill Clinton is her husband and someone that you've known and trusted. No, this is Barack Obama's time.
And that refers, I think, indirectly at least, to some of the criticisms that you've heard from, establishment black political leaders, the latest Andrew Young, who said, wait a minute, yes, Barack Obama should be president, but he should be president in 2016.
Andy Young went really far. You know, he said some things that I don't know that he would be comfortable. He said later he might have been joking, but he said basically that Bill Clinton's as black as Barack Obama, and made it out as if Barack Obama is too young, too inexperienced. And really, I think this was jealousy and anger coming from sort of senior black elected officials, because Obama didn't come up through the normal process, didn't come out of the pulpit. You wouldn't have known, Neil. I don't think you knew who Barack Obama was 2 years ago. I know I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wins, and some would say fortuitously, because Republican candidates fell by the wayside in Illinois. And so there are now people who say, wait a second, how is it that this newcomer, all of a sudden, all these white people are supporting him? Because remember, Barack Obama's base is in the white community, not the black community.
Let's get listeners in on this conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And Myra is with us on the phone from New Haven in Connecticut.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just tired of hearing about the dilemma of the black female voter, that as a black female voter, who are you going to vote for, Obama or Hillary? And I am tired of my participation in politics being reduced to race or gender. I vote on the issues. I vote on what people are speaking about and whether or not I can trust them, and not whether or not they represent me in some racial or gender-based way.
Mm-hmm. And who are you supporting?
Well, it's interesting. Initially, I was going to vote for John Edwards. He was the only person who was talking about poverty in the way I think Americans really need to think about it. But I'm afraid of losing my vote, and so I've decided to go with Barack Obama. I just see him as a consensus builder and someone who's above that, who's really going to be frank with Americans and be a good international presence.
Okay, Myra, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Now, what Myra just said is so terrific, because, you know, I think ideally everybody would say you should look at candidates who represent you in terms of your values, in terms of your priorities for what government should be doing. When you ask African-Americans about this with regard to Barack Obama, you know, it's a very small percentage that say Barack Obama represents their values. In fact, overwhelmingly, they don't, because they don't know him, and they don't necessarily know what he would do or how he would govern. What you see is upper-income, well-educated blacks are more likely to say they share values with Barack Obama. Whites are more likely to say they see Barack Obama representing this coalition that Myra was just talking about, Neil. They see him as a healing force in American life. But for working-class, lower-income blacks, especially women, they don't see it. They don't see Barack Obama's experience as a young person, multiracial, growing up in Indonesia, Hawaii, Columbia University, undergrad, Harvard Law School. They don't share those values and experiences that would allow them to connect emotionally with Obama.
Well, let's get Bob on the line. Bob's calling us from Denville in New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if 30,000 folks showed up to see Obama and join in the political process, or if 30,000 folks showed up to see Oprah. There have been rock bands in the past, particularly in 76 when Jimmy Carter was running. Some of his rock band supporters drew 25,000, 30,000 people at a venue.
Well, that's right. And I think without a doubt they were showing up to see Oprah. I don't think there's any question about that. But
well, the question then becomes is how does that translate primary votes, particularly in South Carolina, particularly against Edwards?
Well, we don't know. And that's the question. You know, Oprah is able to sell a TV show. She sells magazines. She makes bestsellers. Can she make a presidential candidate? And can she do so in specific in this demographic? We don't know. But what we can say is this. That if you look at the black vote right now in South Carolina, in fact, if you look at it nationwide, people who have been participating in the political process are not likely to be swayed. They are locked in either to the idea of Obama as the visionary or Hillary as the experienced person who can deliver for them. And so what we're looking is, could those newcomers who are attracted by Oprah Winfrey later become people who say, you know what, I would like to go and vote and I'd like to participate.
Well, interestingly, Juan, there was a poll that came out, the ABC News Washington Post poll today, that suggested a very small percentage of voters would be swayed by Oprah Winfrey's endorsement. And almost as many said they would be inclined to vote the other way because of her endorsement.
Right.
But again, this is early times and just a poll.
There's another real question here, and that is how many of these new people that she brought in actually going to go register to vote and turn out to vote?
Well, you don't know. And, you know, again, remember what Neil said at the start of this. A lot of the political strategy is aimed at black women specifically because they are such an important part of the vote in South Carolina. Disproportionately, the black men don't go out and vote. So then remember also polls tend to ask people, are you a likely voter? And again, that would not count people who have said, I've never voted before, I'm not registered. So we don't know. That's like an X factor. Oprah obviously can draw a crowd. Can she persuade people to register, to go out and vote? We don't know. Mm.
Thanks very much for the call, Bob. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead. I just wanted to throw one more thing in that. Of course, Hillary Clinton has not left this issue untouched. She's come back with some ads of her own. This from a woman Oprah Winfrey regards as one among her mentors, and that's the great poet Maya Angelou.
Each generation of African Americans stands on the shoulders of those who came before. Today, the challenges facing us threaten the dreams we have had for our children. We need a president with the experience and strength to meet those challenges. I am inspired by Hillary Clinton, a daughter, a wife, a mother, my girl.
My girl.
And I'm telling you now, Maya Angelou is someone who's very well known in Carolinas. She lives there. She's someone who, you know, is not only a mentor to Oprah, but I think, you know, she's sort of an inspirational person, and she is an icon in the black community in this country, but especially among black women. So it has tremendous power. And I would think that if you ask people about Hillary Clinton, what you see is older black women say, you know what, it may be that I feel the weight of history. We've waited so long to have an African American who has real potential to win the presidency, and that's Barack Obama. But as you heard from Andrew Young, maybe it's just not his time. Maybe he's not sufficiently experienced to do the things that need to be done to come after George W. Bush. And they feel that Hillary Clinton, with Bill Clinton, really has the stuff, the experience necessary to do the job at this time.
And that's the other factor I wanted to ask you about. Bill Clinton has tremendous regard in the African American community.
And guess what? Hillary Clinton sent her husband, the former president, to South Carolina just before Oprah Winfrey had her 30,000 audience for Barack Obama. And I think what you saw there was that the people who are part of the political structure, the people who are the politicians, the political consultants, the ministers, those people all flocked to Bill Clinton.
Political establishment.
Exactly. And so what you see is that's in place, Neil. That's not going to move. That's not going to be moved by Oprah Winfrey. And that's why the Clinton campaign sent Bill Clinton down there, was to make sure that was cemented, even as this potentially seismic event of Oprah Winfrey becoming down was going to take place.
Let's get another caller in. This is David. David with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I love the interview, but I have a couple of questions. I've been to the Barack Obama and Hillary affair. It was nice. I want to know, is the Democratic Party going to be kind of cynical who they give the Democratic nominee to? Will it be Hillary or will it be Barack Obama?
Which would, in your mind, be a cynical nomination?
I think it's going to go to Hillary.
And that would be cynicism?
Well, in a way it is. I don't know if they're going to give him the nominee because a lot of people vote for the nominee.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's in the Democratic Party, it's the person who wins the most primaries. It's very clear. There's no back rooms anymore.
Well, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a hot debate.
Uh-huh. It's interesting. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Do you detect some cynicism amongst African Americans, Juan, that this feeling that no matter what happens, it's being arranged for Hillary?
No, but you know what? I think people have the sense that they wonder if whites will really vote for a black man to mm-hmm. be president of the United States. And you see a lot of doubt about that. The people still don't believe that it's real. That are white people really ready to support a black person, to put them in the paramount position of power in the United States, in the world? I mean, he'd be the world leader. And
no matter what they
doubt.
May say in the opinion polls, will they actually cast the ballot?
Yeah. And you know what's interesting to me, someone who loves American politics, is if you look at the money's been there. The money has flowed to Barack Obama. You may question, why is it that this black man and not more experienced black politicians has been able to get that support? But the fact is, he's done it. What an amazing thing he's done.
We're talking with NPR's Juan Williams about the race and the African-American vote, the race, of course, for the Democratic presidential nomination. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ray's with us. Ray's on the line from New Haven.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering, when Senator Obama first began running for president, he was consistently described in the press as a multi-ethnic candidate. When did he become described exclusively as a black candidate, as Vaughn Williams is doing in about 90% of his references to Senator Obama?
I've never heard him called a multi... What did you say, multiracial?
Multi-ethnic candidate.
Multi-ethnic. No, I've never heard him call that. I've always heard him referred to as a black candidate. And he himself...
A moment ago.
I'm sorry?
You used the term multi-ethnic yourself a moment ago.
I don't remember doing it, but you never know with me. But I will say this. He calls himself a black candidate pretty clearly. I mean, there's no question in terms of his identity. Go back and read his books.
Or multi-ethnic, multiracial.
Yeah, he's definitely multiracial because his mother is white and his father's black. And part of the confusion, I think, and the difficulty with especially a lot of the older generation of black leadership is they say, wait, the father is not even a black American. He was a black Kenyan. The mother's a white American. And they have, you know, they throw up all these things, again, because I think they don't know him. They don't feel comfortable with him. They don't know that they don't have the trust level. And if you compare it to Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, people they've known, I think the Clintons have practiced what I call patronage politics. They've delivered to that black community in terms of dollars, in terms of jobs, patronage and the like. And they don't, and the black leadership in this country doesn't know that Barack Obama is going to give them the same deal.
Thanks very much, Ray. And finally, let's go to, this is William, and William with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, I was down at the rally in South Carolina on Sunday. I'm originally from Chicago, so I'm torn between Barack and Hillary. But I think your guest is way off. I think America is a much more intelligent nation, and they're not going to vote for someone just because they're black or white or male or female. They're going to vote for the person that's going to bring this country together, that's going to end this war, that's going to look out for the middle class, that's going to provide health care for all Americans, and that's going to genuinely be concerned about the welfare of this country and how it's perceived by the rest of the world.
And Juan, I think what William's talking about is a lot of Barack Obama's appeal. It's sort of transcending racial politics.
Well, I thought you might ask the caller who he thought was that person.
Oh, he's pretty clear to me. He thought it was Barack Obama. Am I wrong, William?
Well, I'm for whoever the Democratic nominee is, whether it's Hillary or Barack. It doesn't matter because I think either one of them can do just as good a job. I would like to see them run together, and then I'm sure we would have a Democrat in the White House.
Boy, that'd be you'd have a highly energized base there, especially in the black community. But I think a lot of people, especially young people, I just think would be thrilled by that combination. Mm. I don't know who'd be at the top of the ticket. That certainly would be a worthy fight. But you know what? Again, it's idealistic to say, yes, people want to just pick the candidate that represents their interests, their values. But once you start asking voters about their values and who they connect with, it becomes pretty apparent that they make decisions that have to do with race, with experience, with gender. That's part of the American experience. And whether you regard it as fortunate or unfortunate, it's a fact.
Thanks very much for the call, William. And it will be fascinating, Juan, to see, especially in Iowa and New Hampshire, before we get to South Carolina, if largely white voters, white electorates, will vote indeed for Barack Obama. We'll have to see how that comes out.
It really is interesting. But as I said, Neil, the money has flowed, and he has been getting tremendous support in the polls. You look at the poll numbers, and of course, with black candidates, we know there's a history of people saying they'll vote for the black candidate, you know, 5 to 10% maybe drop off when you actually go to the polls. But again, the fact that he's at this level, we've never seen it. As a matter, as a fact of history, we've never seen a black person get this level of support. And right now, the numbers are closing in New Hampshire. If it's possible that he wins in Iowa and then goes on to win in New Hampshire, boy, that would be historic.
Juan Williams, NPR senior correspondent, author of the book Enough: The Phony Leaders, Dead End Movements, and the Culture of Failure That Are Undermining Black America and What We Can Do About It. Juan, as always, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for inviting me.
When we come back, we'll be talking about maps that changed our imaginations and our view of the world. Cartographia. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.